Hello and welcome to the Top Shelf Hockey Cast, where we talk hockey, mostly Islanders hockey, which is a sad state of affairs as of late. I am David Tuckman, joined by Phil Farber and BD Golliff. Phil, how are you as we head into this All-Star break?
I'm rested. haven't had to watch too much Islanders hockey. The good thing is I looked at the schedule for February when the NHL rearranged it. And I tweeted out that the way the Islanders play over the 7-game home stretch is going to determine how much sleep I'm going to be getting in February because of the 7 West Coast games. And I can tell you, I will be sleeping very, very well in February.
BD, how you been, buddy?
I'm pretty good. You guys had to drag me kicking and screaming tonight just because I've been busy with work. But I really feel... Phil's February, I definitely agree. It's going to be pleasant dreams.
Well, the nice thing about being on the West Coast is I can watch these games and live through the pain of it all. Before we get into some of the topics of this podcast, I will come out and say one of the criticisms of Islander hockey over the last few years is how boring it's been. And I've always scrimmed at all these people. I go, fine, you can call it boring. I don't think anything's boring about winning. I like hitting. To me, defense is exciting. I never thought Islander hockey was boring. That game versus the Kraken was the most boring hockey game I have ever seen on both sides. It was so ridiculously uneventful. I was bored, and I love hockey so much.
Snooze fest. Awful game. I think up until Colin Blackwell had a pretty good chance in close that was stopped by Varlamov. I don't think there was a single high danger chance really in that game until mid-second period. It was an absolute snooze fest.
Yeah, I think it was, 7 and 8 total for both teams for chances for high danger?
I think each team had 7 or 8, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really having trouble finding 7 or 8 from the Islanders, but sure. Anyway, let's get into this. So the Islanders head into the All-Star break under 500. Last time we spoke, you know, there was a pipe dream of can they string together enough wins in January to make them relevant? I think it looked like they might. They were 7-3 over a 10-game stretch, and then they lost to Minnesota where they played really well. They lost to the Kings. And then in what was, I think Barry Trotz said, the most disappointing game he's coached as an Islander coach, the loss to the Kraken, being shut out 3-0 at home, just really put a nail in the coffin. And I think the three of us are all on the same page. The season's over now, right, guys?
It's definitely over. I mean, it's sad to say, but, you know, the time to put it and string it together, and it looked for a moment that they were beginning to, and every time they play a good team, that comes to a halt. And then they'll win another against a lower team. So they seem to be just mediocre, good enough to take out the bad teams or not with Seattle. But then all of a sudden, but when they play a good team, it's very rare that we've seen, you know, maybe the overtime versus Edmonton and a couple others. But
Edmonton's not a good team. So
that's true.
They're a middle team. I'd call Edmonton a middle team. They're obviously loaded with talent. It's just they have a very difficult time putting everything together. To BD's point, yeah, I mean, the Islanders they're the definition of the mushy middle. The likeliest outcome here is 9th place because they are good enough to the point where I think they only have 3 regulation losses against teams with losing records, which are the Kraken, the Devils, and the Red Wings. But against quality competition, it's just been a struggle. And they had put together, they had won 6 of 7 games because they played the Flyers a million times and they played the Coyotes in there. And after the Kings game, where they were just a complete no-show until the 58th minute where Barzal scored that goal to make it 2-1, you know, to me, that was where the season died. And then all of a sudden they come out against the Wild and they looked impressive. That was of the best games. I said it after the game. This is of the best performances I've ever seen in the Trotz era. Barry said it himself. They just got absolutely goalied and Sorokin had one of his worst games of his career. The next game against Ottawa, I mean, it looked like they weren't even trying, and they beat the bejesus out of Ottawa. And then you're thinking to yourself, okay, maybe they could built off that game against the Wild, and now they just beat the Senators, and we'll beat the Kraken. And if we have a really good West Coast trip, we can get back into it. And then the bubble was burst again last night. What a horrible effort.
Yeah, that was not impressive at all. Well, let's talk about this for a moment, and then we'll get into a fun game. Very briefly, let's talk what's gone wrong. I mean, this is a team that when Barry Trotz came to Long Island, most pundits thought bottom five team. We lost Tavares, and Barry Trotz and the New York Islanders shocked everybody. Over 100 points, swept Pittsburgh the first round of the playoffs before getting swept by Carolina the following year. They get, bubble or not, they get to the semifinals versus Tampa Bay, take the eventual champions to six games. The following year, they take the eventual champions to seven games. And now the wheels have come off. BD, what's gone wrong? How did we end up here? And by the way, we love the pessimism in you. We love the dark side. This is like our own little version of Star Wars. You need the yin and the yang. We need the dark side of the force to keep this balance.
Well, what's gone wrong is... there's a bunch of different things. Look, we've talked about, there's the obvious one where they replaced Letty with Chara. Letty, if he was easily replaceable, and for some reason, and in pure obtuseness, wasn't replaced, they keep running Chara. It is not the answer. You know, they're not playing Salo and resting on his development. They're just doing everything wrong. Plus, you have the items of some aging players and some players that are, we can all say whether they're aging or not, there are multiple players underperforming. The team is underperforming. So, but, you know, and some of that, with the younger players, is it confidence? Is it the fact that they play a very demanding, grinding style for these last couple seasons and it's wearing them out? I don't know. But there's a lot of different things. And it's not just a matter of, well, had they replaced Letty and, you know, or not traded Taves, and let's just say he was there, there would still be aspects of this team maybe playing a lot better and being in the playoff picture. But I do think there are aspects of that grinding style, of that demanding style, and the aging forwards. And those two things do not gel together. Eventually, they affect one another. So to me, those are the items that have gone wrong.
Phil?
Yeah, I mean, we all spoke about the defense thing, and in hindsight, I think Gustafsson probably would have been a much better route to go with than Chara. He's actually been decent for the Blackhawks. You know, the D issues are obvious. It's a season of everything has gone wrong. They didn't have to deal with really much of any adversity last year. You know, they did the year before with Pelech. That was obviously a big blow to the blue line, and we saw the effects of that, and the only reason they really made it into the playoffs that season was by virtue of the fact that they had the whole bubble format where 12 teams were competing and they had the play-in against Florida. And so we've seen in the past when faced with adversity, it begins to unravel a bit because of the system this team plays. But between the Pulock injury, not addressing the blue line situation in the summer and during the summer in the way they should have, COVID's in three waves where they've had more missed games from starters this year than they had cumulatively last year by like game 22. And then as BD mentioned, everyone pretty much underperforming. I could count on, you know, less than one hand as to who's played well this season. I think Barzal's played really well. I think Adam Pelech has been himself. I think Mayfield's been fine. The goaltenders have been mostly solid, although leaky at times. Nelson, when healthy, has been pretty good. But outside of that, Beauvillier, Pageau, Palmieri, Bailey, Lee, everyone has struggled with consistency. They haven't, even Wahlstrom, right? And to BD's point, is it a confidence thing? Is it the way Barry handles him as to why he goes through stretches of 10, 12 games without a goal? Who knows? But It's a season of everything that can go wrong has gone wrong. And that's why they are where they are.
Yeah, to me, the NHL is a razor-thin league. We have seen good teams fall by the wayside. Then we see the emergence of other teams. You know, whether it's Tampa Bay getting swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets a couple of years ago before, even after dominating the regular season, you know, it's tough, you know. And I do think, yeah, everything has gone wrong. I think, you know, we've gone over the Chara thing. And I think that was clearly a mistake. I do think Lou had a really good offseason, at least on paper. We thought he did. But in hindsight, you know, the Chara signing was a disaster. And there's been no fix for that. Bailey has been a nightmare. And, you know, between that, injuries, COVID, and the rest of it, it is a problem. And I think we look at the team now as we head into this All-Star break, knowing that whether Lou decides to sell or not, this team is most definitely not going to make the playoffs. And we should be sellers, right?
Absolutely. I mean, anything, to quote someone on Twitter, anything that's not bolted down should be available right now at the trade deadline. And a lot of things are bolted down, right? There are certain players that you can't move without either asking them to waive trade clauses or without surrendering assets like they did with Andrew Ladd. I don't think it's as dramatic as some people are saying, where you need to blow the whole thing up. If there were one, two, three players that you could isolate as, here's the problem, here are the two forwards that are clearly lagging behind, then I would say, okay, you know, it's them as an issue. But I refuse to believe that, you know, Pageau getting 2 months older and Nelson getting 2 months older and Lee, you know, I refuse to believe that everyone at once for pretty much coming up flat for most of the season is indicative of each one of these players and what they have left in the tank from between now and the end of their contracts. It just doesn't make any sense.
Listen, fans are going to be fans. It's just the way I think we are as humans. We are going to, after a win or a 5-game winning streak, the Islanders are winning the Stanley Cup. We're the best team ever. Oh my God, we're never going to lose a game again. Then, you know, you go through a season like this and it's suddenly, you know, the sky is falling. This is the worst team ever. At the end of the day, I think there's something in the middle. I mean, I still think Trotz is a brilliant head coach. I don't know if there's a better head coach out there. I happen to love him. I still think Lou Lamoriello is doing a good job. Has Lou made mistakes? Absolutely. Has Trotz made mistakes, in my opinion? Absolutely. I will say, I'll read a tweet that I wrote today, and I thought it was interesting. BD, I don't know if you saw it or not. I said, it's amazing how negative Isles fans are. Maybe it's a New York thing. I said, given the choice to decide if the last three seasons and the playoff successes they had were legitimate, and this is just a bad 39-game stretch, or that the last three seasons were a complete mirage, and this, what we're seeing this season, is actually indicative of who they are. It's almost as if everybody's like, no, the last three seasons are, that was a mirage. This 38-game stretch is the actual truth.
That I did see that. That's really good. And that's true. The fans have always been melodramatic. But I choose option three, that just perhaps the last couple seasons were the peak of this iteration and what we're seeing.
Certainly possible.
That's what I'm starting to feel. And it, like I said, hope I'm wrong. You know, can they snap out of it? But I feel like there's too many things, and you know, they don't have the prospects in the system to make trades to get key players in the offseason.
Well, they could. Let's stop there because hey, hold on, BD.
You think?
Hold
I
on.
Disagree.
Well, no.
We'll talk that later.
Let's talk right now.
But hold on. To BD's point, BD's right, simply because if you just look at the blue line, for example, next year, which has been the biggest issue. You know, the transition game has been terrible, which was a strength of theirs up until this season, you know, with Letty and Taze on the back end. They only have three defensive players under contract next year, and then Dobson, who's a restricted free agent. Presumably, Salo is going to be on the roster next year, but the construction of their blue line is going to be different. So with this iteration of the team, absolutely. This is not a team, as currently constructed, that could go anywhere far. If you ran it back out next year, could they figure out a way to squeak into a playoff spot with this exact roster? Perhaps if they stayed healthy enough. But this is not a cup winning team. There are definitely adjustments that need to be made.
Right. And the question really is, if BD is right, and I think BD could be right, this could be, you know, the last 2 years could have been the best iteration of this team, the best, you know, that could have been the peak, as they say, and this could be the downhill spiral. So do you blow it up or do you retool? In my opinion, I think I heard you say, Phil, as well, since we don't know if BD is right, and since they were only just one game away from the Stanley Cup Finals against an amazing team in the Tampa Bay Lightning, to me, it's a retool and go at it one more year. Now, if next year sucks again, well, then you know you got to blow it up.
Yeah, and with next year, I mean, this is why people who are saying, oh, they need to fire Trotz. Number one, I think that's crazy, given what he's done the previous 3 years. Number two, next year is the last year of his contract, and I don't think Ledecky and Malkin are interested in eating a $5 million loss on that. I think they're going to ride it out regardless, even if they felt that they were needing a change up there.
They could go 6-32 over the next 38, and he's coming back.
100%. There's no scenario where Barry's not back next year.
I mean, unless he wants to quit.
Or unless BD has another take on it.
BD?
No, I agree. I don't I feel that Lou gets a lot of kudos because he should, because he brought in Trotz. Because you would not have the system and the level of goaltending, for that matter, that system has and Trotz has put into place, and you know, really that has been the pivot. You can't remove that. There's nothing that, to me, it is about not handling the players and the management side. I don't feel like the coach is the issue. Maybe there are some mistakes in terms of how he handles the players, or it feels that way because we're seeing the gaps and wishing that those players would fill those gaps, because you have some young players that are there and the gap is glaring, especially this season.
Well, you know, we live in this.
I can't.
Yeah, we live in this polarizing world, whether it's politics or wherever you stand on things. We live in this polarizing world where there's no, it's black, it's white. You're either left, you're right. And there's just no room for a reasonable conversation where it's like, Barry Trotz is a great coach, and he should be the coach for the New York Islanders as long as he wants to. And he's also not perfect. He has also been fallible. He is making mistakes. And he's also still really good at what he does.
BD, I just wanted to cut in here. I want to know if you read the Athletic piece today. I thought it was a really good piece.
No, I got to catch up.
Okay, so they interviewed, I think it was 20 agents, asked a series of questions. So one of the questions was, money being equal, which team or owner would you steer your client toward? And the number one team was Tampa Bay by a mile, but Tampa doesn't really have money to add free agents at this point. Number two was Toronto, again, you know, world-class hockey city. Number three was the Flyers, and then tied for fourth place were the New York Islanders and New York Rangers. And this is what an agent had to say about Lou Lamoriello, and this is going to be relevant to our next discussion with regard to trades and what pieces might be on the move. The Islanders have risen in the minds of agents, particularly after Lou Lamoriello joined the organization. Lou, man, he's always treated the guys well after contract negotiation. He may fuck you over in the contract negotiation, but he treats guys great once they are in. You know what you get with Lou. He's not going to listen to you or tell you what he's going to do with the trade or something like that. But there's a reason every time I have a client play for a team he's run, they rave about it on the daily and would love to go back there. How important is that the Islanders have Lou? And again, this is just a bunch of agents. We don't know who they are. The Athletic is not going to list them. But to you, how important is that when weighing some of the things that you don't necessarily like about Lou in the scheme of this upcoming summer, where they're finally, for the first time in 3-4 years, going to have some cap room to play with and do need to make some pretty significant adjustments?
Well, those are great aspects. And it's also, you know, it also helps with the arena It also helps.
I mentioned the arena right under that. Yeah.
It has the right ingredients. And there's not, look, when not that anybody would say so, but once Lou was hired to be above, at first, Garth, Garth knew he was toast. Lou is considered a control freak. That's how he runs the team. That's how he's always been. And he likes to run the entire ship the way he wants. And once he does that, this team has made some steps. And I think those are, that's really good reminder of the aspects and the items that are needed, because I still feel that there are negatives that come with it, because the more I look at the Islanders, the more they remind me of the post, you know, the post lockout New Jersey Devils and the way they were handled. And those things give me the fear. But there are those items of being an attraction, of getting those free agents. The problem with that is the money involved in you as a healthy team. You need a mixture of youth and prospects in the pool and you know, solid drafts, because you can't just go out and buy. Eventually, you know, free agency has always been, usually never quite reaches your expectation.
Well, and you're being kind. The vast majority of free agents, they made into albatrosses.
Unless you find Panarin, unless you find Tavares, unless you find Dougie Hamilton until he got injured this year.
Tavares for $11 million is what?
Listen, the Leafs haven't been able to do it together, but it's not because of Tavares. I think in a different situation.
I agree with that.
Really? What do you think Tavares would be worth right now in the open market? $11 million.
Now he's older. He's 4 years in, right? He's 4 years into this deal. But I would say his production for the first couple of years probably justified the price tag. Last year, not as much. This year, he's back to around a point a game. He's not someone I would pay $11 million for right now. But the point is, you're anyone who you're paying at the age of 27 and onward, which is what UFA. I think the Rangers are probably going to run into this issue with Panarin at around year five, where Panarin's not going to be an $11.6 million player when he's 32. Unless he ages like Brad Marchand, which he might, because he's an incredibly skilled player. He doesn't necessarily rely on speed. He's, you know, you talk about Josh Bailey as a real cerebral player. I mean, that's Panarin times a million. The decisions the guy makes are just incredible on the ice, and he's a pleasure to watch. But unless you're bumping into that kind of caliber player who could take you there. And then there's another route, right? If you look at the 2017-2018 Blues, right, they just fell short of the playoffs. They were ninth in the West. They went out and they made a great trade and they got Ryan O'Reilly, and that won them a cup ultimately. Right. I mean, I think he was the, he took home the Conn Smythe that.
Well, he was, I mean, Ryan O'Reilly was from on another planet. The last 35 games of that season in the playoffs, he looked like one of the best players in the entire world. It was just unbelievable. Right.
But the point is, for all intents and purposes, that's the, you know, that's a rough equivalent of acquiring someone through UFA. You're talking about a 27-year-old at the time who was on a very large long-term deal. But you're right. It's not very often that you're able to land that kind of player because they're usually not available.
Well, we can talk about that. So I want to circle back, BD. You mentioned the prospect pool for the New York Islanders, and I don't disagree with you. That's clearly lacking. Okay. Regardless of what people think about Ratty or Salo or Skarik in the AHL right now, who just got player of the month playing goaltender down in Bridgeport, regardless of what you think about those players, I don't think it's a surprise that the Islanders' prospect pool is somewhat lacking. But there is a way to fix it, because the Islanders, and surprisingly, are not going to make the playoffs this year. If Lou goes down the path of selling, he can pick up some prospects. So, with that, I have a fun game, BD, that I want to play. We all know the game, Fuck, Marry, and Kill. Well, instead, we're going to play the ice hockey version of it with the New York Islanders, and we're going to play a game called Trade, Bring Back, or Give Away, and maybe Pay Somebody to Take Them Away type thing, like we did with Andrew Ladd. So, let's go through the roster and kind of see, as we go after the All-Star break, with the loss to Seattle, knowing that we're not going to make the playoffs and that we're probably going to be selling, what should we sell? What should we bring back? Let's go through the players, and we'll get your take on some of the I'm not going to go through the obvious names like Matt Barzal and Pelech and Pulock, because we know, obviously, those players are coming back. But we'll talk about some of the other ones here. And right away, we'll talk about Josh Bailey, BD. Trade, bring back, give away.
Kill. No, I'm sorry. You have to look, you have to trade him. He will do, you know, you need to move him for multiple reasons. One, he's not been the player that he needs to be. And he's at a point now that he's expendable. And, you know, maybe that's, you know, fucked with his head over the summer, you know, wanting to be a lifer or whatever, but none of the attributes, none of the things, you know, Bailey had played for bad teams and still been able to produce. And here we have a woefully mediocre team and he's not producing. And it, you know, he looks out of sorts. The whole team's out of sorts, but he's at an age now that it needs to, you know, I think that he needs to be moved.
32 years old. Phil, what do you think?
Yeah, he's going to be 33 when the next season starts. I agree. He has to be traded. I think the only question is, will you be able to trade him and get like a seventh round pick, or are you going to have to pay a team to take him on? I look at the Coyotes roster next year, and they need to spend about $32 million in order to hit the cap floor. I have no idea how they're going to do it, because who are you going to convince to sign for that amount of money that they need to fill up in order to reach the cap floor to play in front of 3,500 fans next year, if that's what the plan is?
Yeah, that's,
I think that is a prime opportunity, with Bailey only costing 70% in real dollars against his cap hit. I think that would be a beautiful match to reunite Bailey with his good friend Andrew Ladd in sunny Scottsdale.
Josh Bailey, by the way, with, you know, there's that long-term deal that we talked about. It's only 2 years left, $5 million cap room, cap space. But as you said, the actual dollars being spent are less than that. As far as I'm concerned,
$3.5 million.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, with Josh Bailey's playoff success and playoff experience the last couple of seasons, does a playoff team look at him and think, hey, we can get him for free? Can he add us? Can he help us? I know that Henrique was put on waivers last year, the Anaheim Duck, and he was not taken. So I suspect that there'll be no takers for Bailey. But I am of the opinion that Bailey needs to go. He cannot be on the roster come next October. Let's keep going down the list. Anthony Beauvillier.
Keep. You keep Beauvillier with the caveat that unless some sort of deal comes along where Vancouver is interested in him and they can't reach an agreement with Brock Besser, and there's something you could add to that deal that makes it make sense for that type of player. I'm not looking to give Beauvillier away for draft picks, though, or futures or anything. I've seen too many hot streaks of his to think that there's not anything more than what he's currently doing that he could offer. I definitely think he can. Is he going to be a 30-30 player? No, I don't think he will be. But unless it's a type of deal that makes sense, I'm not selling him for draft picks, no.
BD, very quickly. I want to try to get through as many players. Same one, okay.
I feel the same. You have to trade him in the offseason as part of a package, not just to make space and picks. And I'm really not sure what we would do with those picks anyway.
Well, so you agree with that, David, right?
My kid wears number 18. He is a mite. Trading Beauvillier would hurt. I think, listen, Beauvillier has proven that he is a playoff performer. And there are a lot of players out there, and we know them as Islander fans, there are a lot of players out there who are regular season studs and then vanish in the playoffs. Beauvillier is not that guy. Beauvillier is a guy who comes up big, not just the big goal versus Tampa Bay in Game 6, the overtime, but he has come up big time and time again. This is a guy, by the way, despite having the worst season, I mean, an awful season, people hate him, he is now very quietly on a 17-goal pace this season. And this is one of the worst seasons he's had. And we're talking about a guy over the last couple of years, he is basically on a 24, 25-goal pace, and he has speed. And in this league, you need speed. I am not interested in trading somebody for 60 cents on the dollar. Let's keep going down the list. Matt Martin. Let's talk about the identity line here. So we'll get through Matt Martin. We'll go through Cal Clutterbuck. And then the question of, is this the end of the identity line? First, Phil, Matt Martin.
I don't even know if Matt Martin will be able to play next year. He's got a lingering ankle issue. They're very public about it. It's not something they've kept a secret. They have at times managed his load by sitting him for Ross Johnston for a number of games. I would anticipate that the next couple months are going to inform as to how bad that injury is, because they're going to be playing a lot of back-to-backs, three and fours, and I'm assuming you're going to see a lot of Ross mixed in there. I'm not sure he's coming back. If he wants to come back and he doesn't want to retire, I don't think we should have him back. It's a situation where, you know, Leo Komarov, him, wave him down to the point where he wants to have his contract terminated and go into media with Boomer or something like that.
BD?
He has no trade value is what I'm saying.
Yeah, he doesn't have trade value. That the type of game he plays and that mileage and the age, I wasn't happy with his contract to begin with. And we've seen the fourth line just basically fall apart. So, you know, he's got to go.
Yeah, and it's not a particularly onerous contract. I mean, if you bury it, the buried penalty is very small. But it's the type of thing where you just don't want that player in the lineup as an everyday player. And I don't see him sitting in the press box. Yeah, he's below replacement. He's you know, it's... He was a great Islander, in my opinion. He filled a role that they needed, and he was successful at times. But he's has like over 800 games on his body, and that's a very hard style of hockey to play.
Well, talking about another player who plays a hard style of hockey, Cal Clutterbuck, still physical. You might argue that he's having one of the better seasons he's had in a while. Has a good shot. Has a ton of playoff experience. He's his $3.5 million is expiring this year. BD, Phil, can we trade this guy? Do we trade this guy? Do we keep him? By the way, my wife would pick fuck, by the way, because she loves Cal Clutterbuck.
I think you could trade him, and I think you could get value for him. I mean, when I think of a team that would want him, think about the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, they hated playing this guy in the playoffs. This guy was all over them. He put up a couple goals in that series last year against the Penguins. I think he had 3 points, 2 goals and an assist. And the 2 years before, the identity line was pasted to the Crosby line, and they did a really good job of it. I think Pittsburgh's a team that would want to look at him to replace that Tanev role that they lost when Tanev went to Seattle in expansion, that just gritty fourth liner who could bang in the odd goal here or there and also, you know, really get in your face and you know, kill penalties. I think a lot of teams would vie for his services, especially because the Islanders are in a situation where they could retain half his salary. And if you can get a mid-round pick for him, a third or something like that, I don't see why you don't do it. He's going to be 35 at the beginning of next year, and that is probably not someone you want to be bringing back at that point.
BD?
The same. Cal is, you know, he's great for what he is, especially I think it's funny that Pittsburgh would look, because he was brought in as a reaction of the Islanders not able to get past Pittsburgh in that shortened season. And they finally, that's the deal that they did because it with Nino, because that finally filled something that they were lacking. And you know, it's unfortunate, but it's time. And I think that the situation dictates.
I heard an interesting take, by the way, now that we're talking about Cal, looking back at the Cal for Nino trade, you know, objectively, when you look at player for player, it's a bad deal, right? Nino is a far better player, but was it necessarily a bad deal for the Islanders in terms of what Cal ultimately brought and the success that they had with Cal? And that's an interesting question that you could ask, because the identity line, they were a real force at one point.
Absolutely. It's an underrated.
It's an underrated trade. It's not as black on white as we traded a 25 goal scorer for a fourth liner. When you consider what this team has been able to accomplish with Clutterbuck, multiple playoff runs, et cetera.
Yeah, no, I completely agree.
Zach Parise. And I have been screaming from the top of the mountain that, this guy is playing much better than the actual results. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, he doesn't score goals. Who cares? I don't give a shit. The guy was brought in on a minimum deal. He kills penalties. I don't see anybody working harder. And even at 37 years old, this guy is playing, in my opinion, great hockey. And whether he's a fourth liner, whether he's a third liner, I think he's a great bottom six player who can kill penalties and bring energy, bring leadership, and put in the odd goal. And while he's been snake bit this year, my guess is that he still finished the season off with like maybe 9, 10 goals, 11 goals, which is fine for a bottom six guy who can kill penalties. Your thoughts on Parisi, BD? We'll go you first.
Well, he's doing exactly what, we've talked about Parisi because he's an aging forward who you lose the timing, you lose the stuff on the shot, and he's not getting the goals, but the effort is all there. The things that he's doing is all there. He's actually an important cog for a playoff team in the bottom six. So I feel like he has good value to do something in the playoffs. I don't think he's going to necessarily score a lot unless he wills it in the playoff series. You know, you never know how it's going to go in the playoffs where they can rise above. But, you know, I do agree that as a, if it wasn't for us keep on carrying so are we you, have on our fourth line, he'd make a great fourth liner.
So let me ask you this, though. Are you bringing him back? If we're trading Clutterbuck and we're getting rid of Martin.
No, he's got to be moved.
He's got to be moved.
He's got to be moved. I meant it for another team.
Okay. Because I'm wondering, because he's on an expiring deal, if we can bring him back on another one-year deal next year to be on the fourth line, would he be okay with that or no?
I would think that ship has sailed, but, you know, okay. if there's a gap and we, you know, Matt Martin's gone and he's willing to come back on the fourth line, I have no problem with that.
For my money, I would love to trade him and then consider re-signing him for another one-year min deal as a fourth liner again next year. But he would be a fourth liner next year and come in there. Phil, what's your thought?
Yeah, I mean, that we've spoken about that. That would be the most ideal scenario. I don't see that happening because that doesn't usually happen. I compare him to like a Corey Perry type, right? Corey Perry, after he was bought out by Anaheim, he had 5 goals for Dallas. Last year, he had 9 goals for Montreal, and now he's playing on a really good Tampa team where he has a dozen goals. I think Parise in a Corey Perry type role where he was on Tampa, where if he were on Tampa, I think he would have like 8, 9 goals just because of the players he's playing with. I think system has a lot to do with it. Me personally, listen, Parise is going to be one of those guys where we're going to know if he's going to be back next season just on the basis of what happens on the trade deadline. If he's not moved, I would bet that he's going to come back because it means that they would have spoken about it because Lou is going to speak to Parise about what he wants to do here. If he doesn't want to come back, you have to trade him. The return, I'm thinking Eric Staal last year, similar age, worse production even, got a 3 and a 5 from Montreal to Buffalo. That's probably roughly the compensation you're looking at. But to me, I would bring him back for the fourth line.
Didn't the Yankees trade Chapman and then re-sign him? Why can't the Islanders do that? I mean, if presumably Lou is talking to these players, why can't he say, hey, listen, I'm going to trade you to a contender, but we want you back next year?
He could, but I think to Beattie's point, and tell me if I'm wrong about what you meant by this, the ship has sailed. Were you saying that Parise just wouldn't want to be back here? Because that's what I assume you meant. And I agree with that.
I feel like he's the type of guy that's an all or nothing, like either I'm part of the... If he's traded, I kind of feel like, and I don't know him personally. That's my sense of it. But
I view him as in the same kind of journeyman category as Corey Perry, who's been on he's on his third team now since getting bought out by the Ducks, chasing a ring, and Jumbo Joe, who tried to chase in Toronto, and now he's chasing in Florida, which, you know, two good destinations to chase a ring in. I put him in that bucket of former elite NHL talent who has all the credentials but never managed to get a ring. And being in the room this year and knowing what's going on there, I just don't know that he'll want to be back and return to a bottom six role next season, even though I would personally like to have him back.
Okay, let's move on here. So going through the forwards here, stop me if I'm totally off base here. Anders Lee is going nowhere. The Barzal is going nowhere. Nelson's going nowhere. Despite what I know some fans would love to see happen, Kyle Palmieri is going nowhere. Pageau is going nowhere. Cizik is not going to go anywhere. Wahlstrom obviously going nowhere. Kiefer Bellows is a restricted free agent. We know Lou doesn't like to give away assets for nothing. What would you do, Phil?
I mean, he's either going to give him a qualifying offer and sign him for another league min deal, or he's going to trade him. He's not going to waive him. he's not going to qualify him. He even qualified Josh Hosang 2 years ago and paid him $250,000 to play in Europe on two separate teams. He's either going to find a deal to throw him into, or he is going to be back as a 13th or 14th forward. That is my opinion.
BD?
Yeah, he has no value. He's not a top six forward. I'm not even sure if he's a bottom six forward consistently on the NHL. And it's just, to me, I don't care what happens to him.
The argument that people make is, well, he can't play bottom six because he's a top six kind of guy, right? He's a scorer. What contending team has Kiefer Bellows in their top six? That's the point. Maybe his game is suited only to top six because he doesn't back check well. He's not a particularly good forechecker. He's a decent stationary shooter, and that's about it. What Stanley Cup team has Kiefer Bellows in their top six?
Yeah, most Stanley Cup teams have speed.
Yeah, he has a highlight goal. It seems like he has a highlight goal every season that Isle fans hold on to. And I have come out and said this. I think I had this conversation with Andy and with Rob Taub, and I said that, you know, if Kiefer does turn into a legitimate regular NHL player, a good one, I will happily buy a Kiefer Bellows jersey for me, for them, and I'll even buy another one for charity and just give it away. I have been on the record of saying this, that I think Kiefer Bellows, unfortunately, I'd love to be wrong here, I think that he's an AHL player, and that's probably all he's going to be. And by the way, he's no longer young. People are like, oh, we got to see what he has. He's going to be 24 in like 5 months.
Yeah, listen, he's the kind of guy that if he went to a bad team, could he play in their top six and put home 15 goals in an 82-game season? Probably. And then you'd have a lot of Islander fans saying, oh, look, we were wrong. This guy's an NHL player. But no, he's not going to do that here. He's not going to do that on a winning team.
He'd be top six in maybe Arizona right now.
Yeah, he probably would be.
But
he probably would be.
Okay.
Maybe.
And they'd still
Actually,
suck.
Probably not. They've got Krause is pretty good. They've got Kessel. Who else do they have there? I can't even name all of them.
Let's head to the defense.
Larry, Mo, Curry.
I think we're all in the same part. Like, you know, if you can get anything for Kiefer, go ahead and do it. Right?
Yeah. I'd be shocked if we even got anything.
Okay. Let's go to the defense here. Adam Pellick's going nowhere. Pullock's going nowhere. Dobson is not going to go anywhere. We know that. He's a restricted free agent. But the other spots are interesting. Chara. Do we need to spend time on this? Do any of us want to bring him back?
Nope.
Is he tradable? Does a playoff team want his experience and depth?
Is Barry and Lou have twins in another city?
Well, no. Listen, you have every year you have these depth veterans that get traded for like seventh round picks. We picked up. Remind me that defenseman we picked up from
the Ottawa. Tampa Bay guy.
Coburn.
Yeah.
But we picked up Braden Coburn. You see guys like Cody McLeod get traded at the deadline for seventh round picks. Every year you have these depth guys that get traded, and Char is a Hall of Fame depth guy. So someone would.
Well, I'm saying, would Boston want him as a seventh defenseman?
It's a return? But just going back, and the reason I brought up that Athletic article is because, you know, I knew we were going to talk about the defense, and this is where that Lou element comes in and the attraction of the island that he brings, right? Players know that Lou will take care of you. And if that's the reputation that he has, then what comes with that is a conversation that Lou is going to have with a guy like Chara, that he's going to have with a guy like Andy Green. And ultimately, I think if those players don't want to be traded, the benefit of a late draft pick versus keeping the optics of Long Island as such that you're going to be treated fairly and you're going to be treated well here. And when you reach a certain point, you're going to be taken care of. I think that outweighs a late round prospect that has a 3% chance of making the NHL. And ultimately, that's probably the right thing to do.
I tend to agree. Well, let's turn. You mentioned Andy Green. Let's assume that Andy Green is okay with being traded to a certain number of teams. Are you trading him? Are you bringing him back next year? What's your thought process?
I am trading him. I'm trading him because he has been particularly bad on back-to-back and three and fours. In spots, he's looked very good this season, but I have noticed, and I also noticed after the long break, it took him longer than anyone else to get back into it. he just doesn't have what he had even two, 3 years ago, even last year. He's an older player. He shouldn't be an everyday player. And my fear is that if he were on the roster next year, people would think, oh, well, he might be a seventh defenseman. I just don't want Trotz to be using him as a sixth defenseman even. So I would be more than comfortable moving Andy Green, assuming Andy wants to be traded.
BD?
Yeah, what Phil said.
We're just agreeing on everything, simple. But yeah.
It really is.
What can Green get us, guys? What do you think Green can get us? I mean, because listen, at times he's been good this year, and then at other times he has been really, really bad. But I think for some teams, he would actually be a good bottom pair defenseman that can kill penalties and block shots, and he's got some playoff experience. What can he get us?
Yeah, I mean, he has a lot of playoff experience these past 2 years with the Islanders, and he's a really good penalty killer. A mid-round pick. I mean, he'll get you more than Chara would get you, I would think.
I would say then it's possible that he could get a fourth.
Possible.
I don't know if it would be any more than that. I really feel like it's more like fifth, but it would be nice if fourth.
Well, let's turn our attention to somebody.
I mean, I remember, I think it was Columbus who gave the Rangers like a third and a fourth for Adam McQuaid, not even to play in the playoffs, right? Teams do that. They stock up on enough quality depth that in case of emergency, you can never have enough depth. Your goal is to get 16 victories in up to 28 games potentially. And you know, after having played 82 games, injuries are going to come up. And the reality of it is, right, look at Boston. They lost Brandon Carlo in the playoffs last year, and their blue line was an absolute mess because they had no one behind him.
And that's kind of why I brought up. I said, listen, I don't think I have no thoughts that Chara. First of all, does Chara want to go anywhere or not? But if let's say he's okay with going somewhere local, you know, would a team like Boston be like, you know, let's bring him back? He knows the system. He knows our guys. We love him. He's a great locker room guy. He's a seventh defenseman. If we do get a Brandon Carlo injury, he can go in there for a game or two, and we don't, you know, we don't lose the world there. Let's turn our attention to somebody who could actually restock that prospect pool. BD, you referenced our terrible prospects. Well, if we traded Scott Mayfield, our entire we could refill the cupboard, so to speak. For you, Scott Mayfield, bring him back. He has 1 year left, by the way, on a $1.45 million deal. He will be 30 at the start of next season. And then he'll want to get paid, by the way.
Yes. It's painful to say it, but, you know, it's something that I don't think Mayfield's going to turn out a pick, like even a first-round pick for a playoff team, that is going to be something that first pick is going to change the fortunes of the Islanders. That type of late pick is never that great, but it's something that has to be done. He's nearing the age. That's too many items, and what teams are willing to pay, it's about overpayment. If Mayfield can create overpayment, then it's a worthwhile trade to happen. But, you know, we talk about the blue line and the gaps that we're going to be facing. And then now we're taking Mayfield out of the equation. And that's still even more of a gap. So, reservation.
No riding the fence. Are you trading him or are you keeping him, bud?
I think you have to trade him because of the value, but it's on the this contingent of being must be overpayment.
I mean, the value will be ridiculous. Mark Savard.
David Savard. Mark hasn't played in a while.
Good point. I'll just keep saying Mark because it makes no difference. David Savard. Thank you very much, Phil. David Savard was Tampa Bay paid a 1, a 3, and a 4 to get David Savard. Now Mayfield is arguably better. Actually, has something to offer offensively.
He's not arguably better. He is better.
Okay, there you go. He's better, and he's cheaper, and they get him for another year at $1.45 million.
Yeah, I think the best move with Mayfield, you could really squeeze a lot out of this asset because the Islanders, their cap situation is such next year that if they wanted to even retain half, for a team like the Maple Leafs to get Scott Mayfield under contract next year at under $750,000, I mean, that would just be ridiculous value for a team that's strapped for cash and that's up against the cap. So if you're getting a return in excess of David Savard, and this is to Beattie's point earlier of, well, we have no assets to even make a trade if we wanted to acquire a player in the offseason like Jacob Chychrun or someone like that. Well, here is where the assets could potentially come from, right? If you get a first and a second, or, you know, I've seen some Leafs writers write about, oh, well, maybe they'll take a second in Travis Dermott. No, we're not taking a second in shitty Travis Dermott. I'm sorry, right? We're not taking young defensemen who didn't work out with you. If they give, you know, a first round pick, one of their better prospects, and maybe something else, that is a trade that I think ultimately you have to do. If Mayfield was under term longer, I would say probably not, because then you would leak into the Barzal year, and you ideally would want to have that kind of contract on the books. But with Barzal do a raise and with Wahlstrom do a raise in 2 years from now, I just don't see how they could bring Mayfield back that season when he's likely going to command 3.5 to 4.5 on a 4 to 5 year term.
Well, I mean, if you look at him and you want a comparable like a Nikita Zadorov,
you know,
he's making $4 million, I think.
Yeah, he's probably going to get $4 million at age 31, and
he's going to also get like he's going to get like four times four probably as well.
Yeah, and it's very important when any deal that's done this summer really needs to be done with next summer in mind, as in summer of 23 for Barzal and for Wahlstrom. And Wahlstrom right now is not going to be a major ticket item unless he has a blow up year next year. But you never know. The planning for this summer needs to include the following summer. And because Mayfield is not under contract for that summer, and I don't think they're going to be able to bring him back at the price that he'll want, that is why I would do this trade.
This is, and I agree with both of you, I would trade him. And I have been the most outspoken about this. I like Scott Mayfield.
Scott Mayfield. He's a good offensive player too. I mean,
he makes some
of the most ridiculous passes you'll ever see.
The issue with Scott Mayfield and the reason why I'm letting him go is, number one, like as you said, you've got to re-sign him when he turns 30 years old. It'll be his 31 year. Do we want to have another aging defenseman? Do we want to pay somebody $4 million from the years 31 to 35, say? My other issue with Scott Mayfield is, while he's played well this year, early in the season when Chara needed to be babysat and they had to break up Pelech and Pulock. The other issue, and you pointed out right away, Phil, you were right on it, Andy Green and Scott Mayfield was not a pair. So now I'm looking at it going, well, if Mayfield is not versatile enough to be able to play with Green and he has to play with Pelech, well, then what's his value really?
Can I argue that on the versatility? He is not, because both of them needed puck movers. Andy Green needs a puck mover. And I don't feel like that.
But that's the problem. That means he's not versatile enough. That means I need to put him with a specific type of player.
Like Pelech is not what you'd consider a puck mover. He's a good skater. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't consider him a puck moving blue liner. He's a good skater. Mayfield is a slightly below average skater, and it works because they're just both really, really good defensemen. Mm-hmm. That's why that pair works. They're not driving offense in the way that Pelech and Pulock do when they're together. Right now they have Pulock stapled to Green. Part of that is because it's a bit of a rehab process. He hasn't played in 3 months. But also I just don't think they have a fit, because they want to keep Dobson with Chara. If you move Pulock up with Pelech, you just can't have Mayfield with Green.
And that's why, listen, I'm not saying I agree with you. They lack a left-handed puck moving defenseman that you can pair with Mayfield. And yeah, because we don't have
the ideal situation, you'd want three interchangeable righties and lefties, right? That anyone at any given time could play musical chairs and make it work between a righty and a lefty. And I think what David's saying is he just can't. He only works with literally two players.
Right, and I don't want to pay a guy.
One, he only works with, he literally only works with Pelech. He doesn't work with Green. He only works with Pelech.
So, and because I have to play him with Pelech, and I really ideally want Pelech with Pulock again, it just becomes a problem. And that's not a guy I want to pay $4 million, especially as he gets a little bit older. For me, at the end of the day...
He'll work with Salo, though. He would work with Salo next year.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's the thing. And we were already making... And these players shouldn't be there by the time that contract comes up.
Without a doubt.
And by the way, the last thing to make on the Mayfield is, there is zero chance that he's moved to me because... of the contract and because of Lou being
Lou. Listen, I happen to agree with you.
As much as I want to.
I happen to agree with you. I think they're going to be looking at next year, and they're going to look at Mayfield as a piece that is absolutely necessary for next year's run, and they're going to retool, and they're going to keep Mayfield. I will scream from the top of the mountains once again that Scott Mayfield, this is about asset management, and you are trading somebody at their absolute peak before they lose all their value. And you can, you know, if you trade Clutterbuck and you get a three, and you trade Parisi and you get a three, and you trade Green and you get a four, and then you trade Mayfield, suddenly we've got a lot of picks to play with where we can go, you know, find somebody else to bring in, or we can use those picks and we can draft and we can, you know, restock our prospect pool. So for me, I'm trading Mayfield. I am with you though, BD. I don't think he'll get moved.
Quick thought is, would it be better for them to consider it over the summer? As much as let these rumors
No.
Trade deadline is the premium price.
Yeah.
Premium plus, pricing at the deadline.
Think about a playoff team. Think about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Think about all the teams that need a right-handed...
To go to the cup.
A right-handed... Well, no, look. Time-eating, penalty-killing defenseman. They're going to get... With Mayfield, they get two runs at it by trading for him now.
Right. Look at what Blake Coleman got. There's no way in a summer deal Blake Coleman would have gotten... What did he get? Like a first-rounder and a former first-round pick? Right. You look at what Victor Arvidsson got this summer. Summer trades are always depressed value. I think the Kings got Victor Arvidsson for a 2 and a 3 or a 2 and a 4 this summer. You trade Victor Arvidsson at the deadline last year, you're probably getting a first rounder plus. That's just the way it works.
Yeah. No, I think if you trade Mayfield, you definitely trade him over the next month or so. Let's go on to really the last cog in this, which is Varley. BD, what do we do with Varley? He's got 1 year left. 1 year left at $5 million. Say what you will, he's clearly not been his best. This is not the best season we've seen Varley, but he is not the reason we are one.
Varley is playing at a 916. 916 is above league average. It's in line with his career numbers. Three out of his last four starts, he's batted 930 plus. He did 970 against Washington, 931 against the LA Kings, and 935 last night against Seattle. You should not lose, certainly not all three games, but you should not lose with 930 goaltending. Yeah. They are scoring close to three goals a game with Sorokin in net. Eight of the last eight Sorokin starts, they've scored three plus in all eight of them. Varlamov is getting less than two runs every single game. It's bizarre. It's crazy. If Sorokin was getting the run support that Varlamov was getting, you would see a lot more hate on the timeline for Sorokin than you do Varlamov if the shoe was on the other foot. The other side to that is 10 of Varlamov's 14 games that he's appeared in have been against playoff teams. He hasn't had the luxury of playing the Coyotes twice and the Senators twice and the Devils three times. He just hasn't had the same schedule as Sorokin. He's got the Leafs. He's got the Capitals. He's got the Kings. He had the Wild. He had the Predators. I mean, they've been giving him the tougher games and they've been giving him no support.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Varley needs to be traded. We knew that this would be the case. The team being what it is now, it's time to at least blow that up. And you know, you have to build with Sorokin and find a team that's willing to take him on, and how many years does he have left?
One year and five million. You could even
definitely
retain a million.
Get some value.
He'll be, by the way,
that's the trade that should happen. And
he'll be 34, by the way,
in 2 months. There's no reason for it not to.
He'll be 33. He's turning 34 or 34?
He's turning 34.
He's turning 34.
He was born in 1988, so he's already 33. He'll be 34 on April 27th. So just about 10 weeks away, he will be turning 34. He has 1 year left at $5 million. You say trade him. Phil?
I say trade him. I think you could even get creative with it if you're willing to do a little bit of salary retention. Because, again, next year is not a cap crunch year. 2 years from now is what you needed to plan for, as I keep talking about. So if a team needed salary retention, here's the other piece, though. The other piece is Varley has a 16-team no-trade list, right? So he could really limit where he wants to go. The question for you guys is, do you think he would waive his no-trade for a team like Edmonton, who desperately needs a goaltender, because he would be able to get a bigger contract on the back end of that deal as a starter, as opposed to backing up Sorokin, right? my thought process is like this. People are saying, well, he'll never go to Canada, right? The reason he has that no trade is to go to Canada. And I say, well, the reason he has that no trade is because he probably doesn't want to live in Winnipeg for 4 years, right? Because this was a 4-year deal. But to go rough it in some random city for from now until whenever they're eliminated from the playoffs, spend the summer wherever you spend summers, and then go there for a year with the prospect of getting one last big contract, I could see him doing that. Do you think he would waive to go to a place like Edmonton?
It really depends on family. It depends on what he values. When it comes to the players and when they want to play somewhere else, it's about the family. It's about, you know, where they want to be and weighing all that out. It's a possibility, but once that is broached and a discussion point, you know, it's, you know, but I think he has to be moved.
The question I have for you now about him.
I find that more often than not, by the way, BD, and tell me if I'm wrong. I find more often than not, once it's broached, the player ends up waving, right? Andrew Ladd's a different story. They made him miserable, so he had no choice but to wave to go to Arizona. But I find that usually GMs are creative enough where they get them to wave. The Leafs, they tried trading Kadri to Calgary, and then Kadri found out about it, and he's like, screw this, I'm not going. And then once that conversation already happened, he ended up waiving his no trade to go to Colorado because he saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
That's, to me, that's usually how these things end up going anyways.
Question I have is, what can we get for Varley? Ken Holland has come out and said that he was not trading prospects. He's not trading the one. I believe it. I believe it when I see it. Exactly. They brought in Evander Kane, and if they keep winning, and you pointed out earlier on, they're 6-0-1 in their last seven. Their only loss was an overtime loss to Ottawa. If they keep winning and Kane keeps scoring, you start looking at this team with McDavid and with Draisaitl and Nurse, and if they are just a goaltender away, can we get a one for Varley? What's the expected return for him?
One is that GMs, whatever they say, is worthless unless they're Lou.
Right.
Let's be honest.
And Lou says nothing.
Lou says nothing.
And Lou says nothing. So it's he wouldn't say.
He never wants to put his foot in his mouth like Holland. Exactly.
Right.
So it was stupid for him to even say it. Well, it actually isn't stupid because it drives a point and becomes a sticking point to have a conversation, even if the other GMs don't even believe him. But, you know, that it has to get it. One has to be part of it. And if I was the Islanders, I'd be asking for key prospects. It should be one and more, period.
Yeah. And
they're the ones in the driver's seat. Edmonton's goaltender desperate.
Yeah.
If they really want to,
there's only a couple of veteran
focus, all that attention.
Yeah, there's only a couple of veteran goalies that are available, and not many playing as well as Varley. You know, you've got Fleury in Chicago. You've got Varley, and that's. I don't know if there's another one out there.
Forget that. If you look at next summer, this year was a bumper crop of goaltenders available on the market. You know, Linus Ulmark and they're escaping me, but even Jonathan Bernier, he got injured, I know, but he was a pretty decent goaltender. This year it's Marc-Andre Fleury and then like Braden Holtby. And Braden Holtby's not even that good anymore. There are no goaltenders. So a team like Edmonton that has Koskinen and Smith, who are both terrible on expiring deals, they need to have an eye toward next year also. And they just seem like a perfect match because they have that goalie vacancy next year. Part of what also needs to be factored into the price here is the Islanders would more than likely be taking Koskinen back in this deal, which is a negative trade asset, right? He's on a $4.5 million deal. So it's the price of getting Varlamov.
But he's expiring, isn't he?
He is expiring, yeah, but he's still a negative trade asset. Why would we want to pay him that kind of money?
Right. I mean,
asking Ledecky and Malkin to foot the bill for that for the rest of the year for a guy they probably don't even want. So we would be taking Koskinen back to even out the dollars there. This is the GM that paid 2 second-round picks for Andreas Athanasiou for 9 games and didn't even qualify him in the offseason. I mean, when this guy gets desperate, he's going to make a desperate knee-jerk move. He needs to make McDavid happy. He needs to keep him happy. He needs to keep Draisaitl happy. He can't have Draisaitl to borrow, quote, get pissy. to get pissy at a press conference with a Hall of Fame reporter, of course.
Listen, you could argue the West with the goaltending issues that all the teams have in the West. As good as Colorado is, as good as Vegas is, when Eichel comes back, you could argue that the goaltending woes in the West make it wide open, and that this is the year that maybe you could get through.
Yeah, I mean, Leonard has a 9-10 in Vegas.
He's been terrible.
He's been pretty hot and cold. He's been better of late, but he hasn't been consistent by any stretch. Binnington is no longer the starter in St. Louis. It's Ville Husso.
Yeah.
Who's been great, but I mean, he's Ville Husso.
Just speaks volumes. It speaks volumes about goaltenders, by the way, and kind of what I had suggested, I think, in a previous podcast. I feel like goaltenders are like running backs in the NFL, and you know, you put a goal. I feel like Mitch Korn and Barry Trotz can bring in a goaltender. They can bring in an average goaltender. They can bring in a journeyman, and they can make him really good. And that's probably what they should do: bring in average goaltenders, make them look great, and then trade them. And then just bring in another average goaltender.
Hey, they could probably make Mikko Koskinen into a decent backup next year.
Koskinen would be a fine backup to Sorokin.
If Skarik's not ready.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect. So, BD, to go back to your prospects, the Islanders' prospects would suck. If we make the trades, and I am fully aware of the fact that Lou is not going to do this, but if we did make these trades, from my calculations, and I'm being conservative, we would probably get a couple of prospects and two ones, a two, a three, and a couple of fours. How would that look?
Yep. Well, until we'll see. We know that fans will overrate whoever we get. Doesn't matter.
But we can turn those picks into players. Matter. Keep in mind. We can
We're talking about flipping those picks into players, though.
We'll see about that. That's the problem. Because you have moving parts and hoping. But I don't disagree within this. It's definitely something to work with. But half these things, more than half, will not happen. And I'm not even sure what they're going to be willing to move. Varley is the one that really should and would be a crime for him not to be moved. Yeah. Mayfield, you can make arguments. You can make arguments on some other, but Varley is the one. That Lou would have, doesn't get moved, Lou has made a mistake. Well, and it's not the first, and it will not be his last.
Yeah, well, Lou is usually fairly active when he's a buyer. We'll see if he is active when they are sellers. Obviously, this is not something that they thought, that the position they thought they would be in. It's not the position that any of us thought they'd be in. But, you know, maybe it's a gift. We're going to get a pretty good draft pick out of this, a top 15 pick in all likelihood. And, you know, if he does trade some pieces away, we'll have some more picks and maybe some more prospects that we can talk about over the next, next few years.
Anybody want Kyle?
Nobody's going to want Kyle right now. No one is going to want Kyle. And the suggestion to buy him out is also a pretty stupid one.
No, that's stupid.
That is, it's way too soon. And number two, why would you want a dead cap hit for 6 years? Yeah, I know it's not a huge amount, but I mean, why would you want 1.6 on the ledger for 6 years? It's stupid.
It is stupid. It is premature. Look, I've talked about Kyle Palmieri and as the aging forward, and I keep hoping and waiting and trying to see if that changes. You hope that's injury, but more I see it. That said, you don't buy him out. It destroys your great point. On the perception from agents, from players, and culture,
yeah.
You know, that it goes against. So it just for that, and I think it's premature.
Well, this podcast has gone on a little bit longer than we normally go, but we haven't spoken in a while, and we probably won't talk for a little while. You've got the All-Star break. The Islanders are going to come back and play some meaningless hockey over the next month or two. But we'll get back together. We'll talk about the rest of the NHL. We'll talk about the Islanders as we get into the trade deadline. If you do like the show, let your friends know about it. I don't even know. Can they subscribe, BD?
Yes. If they on Spotify and on Apple, you can subscribe. So, you know,
can they leave us a review?
They can leave a review on, I know that they can leave a review on Apple. So, you know, and you know, it's unfortunate this season. We can't, it's been such a weird season to try to, you know, push a podcast. You know, it's usually high drama. And in this, it's just mediocrity. It's mush. it's very difficult to kind of pivot, but you know, we're here to stay, and we'll keep plugging away. And you know, the subscribe, review.
I like it. Plug
ask
away.
Ask us questions, and we'll keep on coming.
Plug away. He is at BD Golf on Twitter. Phil is at Phil's Facts on Twitter. I am at Tuck on Sports. Please subscribe. Leave a review. And if you do leave a review, maybe BD, maybe we'll play the real game of fuck, marry, or kill with you next time, okay?
Yeah, that's when we get thrown off the Apple. But yeah, sure.
There's a lot worse. There is a lot worse on Apple. I think we're safe. I want to thank all of you for tuning in. Enjoy the All-Star break, and we will talk to you in later in February.